Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. First, we check in with the Commissioner's Cup standings. The games are piling up. The point differential is high. We got some fun matchups coming up. We talk about all that and more. We check in on the expansion teams, the tempo, finding some flow, the fire, hitting some roadblocks. We talk through them. And it is Death Taxes, the Las Vegas Aces and the New York Liberty winning a bunch of games. We talk about what's impressed us the most about those two games, and we get into some random shout outs from there. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Before we get going, the all-new 2026 Soccer Pick'em is here just in time for the world's biggest soccer tournament. Make picks each round, earn points, and climb the leaderboard. Play solo, create a private group with friends, join a public group to play with other fans, or even join our Yahoo Sports group to see if you can beat us. Join at yahoofantasy.com/soccerpick'em. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Wednesday. A little bit of a twist for us this week. How are you?
Good. Ready to talk some hoops.
All righty. We have the abbreviated intro. No guests this time around, so we're going to get right to business. A lot of fun things happening in the W right now. We are in the thick of Commissioner's Cup play, which is ending next week. And I just want to alert our fans, as there are always complaints every year about why are there two games happening at this time? Why are there three games happening on this night, but one game happening on this night? I just want to go ahead and give you the early heads up. As Commissioner Cup play ends next Wednesday, there are going to be six games on next Wednesday. Prepare your complaints, mentally prep for the heavy slate to close out the standings so we can finally figure out who's ultimately going to be representing each conference in the title game. But want to sprinkle that in. To the actual standings, though, Steve, we have some fascinating races developing ahead of us already. The New York Liberty undefeated at the top of the Eastern Conference. The Atlanta Dream 3-1, but they have the highest point differential in the conference right now. And those two teams are facing off against each other on Thursday. That is going to be fun. The Minnesota Lynx continue to run through everyone. They are 4-0. The Las Vegas Aces, 3-0 right now. They have the Portland Fire, I think, Thursday night. And then we get Lynx Aces for the first time this season over the weekend. That is going to be a marquee matchup. And then you add on the Commissioner's Cup flow on top of that. I guess for you, Steve, what is the most interesting bit of the Commissioner's Cup standings right now? What are you kind of keeping an eye on as we head into the tail end?
Well, I always think it's fun when the Commissioner's Cup comes up because we've had a bulk of play, and now you're looking at some teams who have had good starts to their season and good records, but like the Portland Fire have not won a single Commissioner's Cup game. So it's one of those things where you can be eliminated from the Commissioner's Cup pretty quick based on losses and point differential. So it gets interesting. I think the battle at the top on each side is fun. I feel like the Eastern Conference, it's always kind of a little bit of a mess and someone can sneak in at the last second. So the Liberty Dream game, that'll be interesting to see how that works out. The Lynx and their point differential is just hilarious. So it kind of is going to come down to, hey, are the Aces going to beat the Lynx, or are the Lynx going to go ahead and be in the Commissioner's Cup finals? So fun contrast, but that I like the best part is the build. As things go on, matchups become more important, things get settled. So it's been fun to kind of watch that play out.
Yeah, I was reading up on the tiebreakers just to see, especially in light of what the Eastern Conference looks like right now. I was trying to see brush up on the tiebreakers. So we have a two-team tie at the end of this next week. Then the head-to-head is going to determine the winner of that case. If we get more than two teams tied, then it's head-to-head between the three or more teams. Then it's point differential. Then it's total points scored during the Commissioner's Cup play. Then it's the highest winner percentage of regular season intra-conference games. And if all of that is somehow tied, then it's just a random draw. And I don't think it's going to happen this year. I do at some point throughout the history of the Commissioner's Cup, I do want to get to the random draw at some point just to see how that works and to see what the fallout is going to be on that front. But the East is fascinating, Steve. The Dream 3-1. The Fever have beaten them. The Fever are 2-1. Like, we could enter next Wednesday. But like, hey, what is going on here exactly? As the Liberty would be capping things off against the Chicago Sky next week. Like, it could get fun. Like, a three-way tie is kind of plausible here. In the West, you got to keep an eye on the Dallas Wings as they haven't. We will see what happens on that front. I'm excited.
I had a lot of eyes in the Dallas Wings until the game against the Lynx, and that feels like that settled a few things in my eyes. But the team you got to look out for that we're not talking about in all these tie scenarios, the Toronto Tempo, who have only played two Commissioner Cup games, and they place Connecticut, Washington, Atlanta, and Indiana. And so they could play their way into this if they win their next two games. We're talking about Liberty Dream. If the Dream win, everyone's 3-1. Will the Tempo make a run? It's Tempo links in the Commissioner's Cup Finals. What do you think about that?
Ooh, but that would be it. Ooh, that'd be a fun one. That would be a fun one. Nice clash of styles there as well. Actually, while we're here on the Toronto Tempo, suffered a blowout loss on May 23rd, I believe. And since then, they've won three of their last four. Steve, as I was like prepping for the pod, as I love to see like how teams are doing in terms of how teams and players are doing in terms of their drives and things. The Tempo drive numbers over their last four games have been patently absurd. And that loss came against the Portland Fire, by the way. But since then, 7-point win against the Sky, 21-point win against the Storm, lost by 15 to the Liberty, and then they beat Chicago by 17. And that second matchup against Chicago in particular, where the Sky just, by their own admission, post-game, just didn't seem like they were just prepared for what the Tempo were going to do. They set the tone very early, forced turnovers, got out in transition, but they drove all over the place. And we've talked about their driving talent before and just their emphasis on getting downhill. The way that they want to work side to side, the way that they kind of implement their off-ball movement, their off-ball screening, it kept Chicago on their back foot pretty much that entire basketball game. And the amount of possessions where Brittany Sykes or someone else would kind of see whether it's a flare happening or a pin down happening and deciding, oh, you are occupied. I have room to just go. Let me just get into the teeth of the defense. Let's see if you can win this one-on-one. You cannot hold me. Was one, it was fun for me to watch from the Tempo perspective. From the Sky perspective, as I did not watch that game live, I certainly understood why there was so much ire and so much consternation after that game, because the Tempo just drove all over the place. It just kind of speaks to their collective talent, what they have in that guard room in particular. I've just really enjoyed what they've been able to put together as of late. What's kind of stood out to you about this Tempo group?
Well, I mean, I won't echo too many of the points you've made. I think that's been the important part for Toronto is just continuing to build this the right way. And it's hard to say they're getting healthy when they lost Kiki Rice, but they are getting healthier. And so we're seeing kind of the balance of their lineups making more sense. The defensive base has been strong and trying to hold that up. Maybe not every night you get it, but there's a base of activity and physicality that helps them. And then offensively, they're getting side to side. It's been Marina Mabry or Brittany Sykes every game. Someone's going to throw that graphic up. But using one of them on one side, swinging to the next, using the other. Sobley's roles have been really important during this run. Like Maria Conde being able to play the three now that Izzy Harrison's back. Like there are different things that they're able to do and have a level of versatility. So it's just kind of fun to watch them develop and grow as the season goes on. Where they have the talent, can they kind of just find the consistency with what they want to do on both ends of the floor?
No, I'm right there with you. I think sticking with the offense for a moment, I'm glad you brought up Niara Sabali because, boy, this has been a fun stretch for her over these last four games. A shade under 16 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, but two of those on the offensive glass, averaging over a steal and a block. The roles have hit, to your point, Steve, and I think it ties into having Brittany Sykes on one side, Marina Mabry on the other side, and her being able to slip into space in conjunction with the way that the Tempo want to space and the way they kind of layer their cutting to kind of bend what defenses want to do with them from a help perspective. 66% on twos is kind of nuts. It's the mix of roles and also the drives from Diarra Sabali during the stretch. Shooting 44% from three. Lower volume, 2.3 attempts right now. But if you can also stash her on the wing or in the corner, like that helps your flow because she can just flow in, you know, kick it to her, flow into a handoff or flow into a secondary pick and roll. If you help off too far, she could just take the shot and knock it down. It's been a really fun stretch for her offensively. Again, Brittany Sykes just living in the paint, living at the line. Marina Mabry inside the arc has been intriguing to me. Hasn't hit threes to the same clip, but that is perking up. Her just getting to the midi pretty much whenever she wants to has been a fun development. And because of the way that she shoots and how comfortable she is navigating tight spaces, if you do try to show that crowd, it really does not matter to her, especially not right now. So it's been a fun bit with the Toronto Tempo right now. And then quickly to the drive point. During this run, 44 drives per 100 possessions. 1.3 points per possession on trips featuring a Toronto Tempo drive over the last four games. That is not a sustainable figure, but that is one of the most insane things I have seen team-wide from a team put that together. So kind of wrap that back into the bubble of Commissioner's Cup play. If they're able to maintain that flow and maintain that downhill juice, and as you mentioned, continue to set the tone defensively with their pressure, with their physicality, with their activity, this is not a team that you want to see. And so I wanted to give the quick salute to the Toronto Tempo on that front. Can I ask you a question, Steve?
Sure.
So I honestly, like, the base question I have is, like, did the Golden State Valkyries kind of spoil us last year? But I kind of want to tie that into the Portland Fire, because you mentioned them a little bit earlier as they've had a solid season overall. They have not won a Commissioner's Cup game yet. They are currently riding a three-game losing streak. I guess I'm just kind of curious, like, how you absorb that within the lens of what they're trying to build slash, like, where they are in the standings.
I mean, I don't think the Valkyries spoiled us. I think what the Valkyries did was exceptional and not easy to replicate. But because they did it, teams are going to be able to try and find an identity through the players that are available. And so the Tempo and Fire, I think, are different examples. Like, the Valkyries very strongly, hey, we have skilled players, but we're going to defend, we're going to drive, we're going to shoot threes. This is going to be our identity. This is how we win. And they found success with that. The Tempo, I think they have, you know, obviously having Sandy Brondello helps a lot, but hey, we have scoring. We have the ability to have versatility. We can defend. So we can kind of try and hit the best of both worlds. Obviously, the Fire have a completely different approach as far as what they want to do, but we have a lot of skilled players. We're going to do things our way. We're going to have the answers to the problems, and we're going to solve them and have the counters. The only thing that's been interesting about this stretch is kind of the thing I was wondering about. Okay, how will the Fire respond if there's a point where the league kind of catches up? I don't think that we're there yet, where the league has just figured exactly everything out that they want to do, but they're going to have to build this thing out. Because offensively, if you're not purely running sets, not that they don't have calls, you know, you'll see them have different things they'll trigger to get into the first action and they'll flow out of it. But if you're not necessarily, if you're playing to counter what teams are doing and you're having to rely on a level of flow, you can ding teams when they're a little bit unaware. But as you put more tape on film, teams are going to be more aware to certain things. I think the Sparks game was a good example. I think the Sparks game is probably the weirdest Fire game to me. As far as their flow goes, usually, whether they're scoring or not, there's always they get to the next action. They get to the next spacing. They get to the next cut. They get to the next drive. There's a little pass hole, which I'm like, I don't know if you guys want to live there. It's probably not what you want to do. But this is going to be the up and down of building this out for them offensively with teams that are going to rely on more pressure, rely on more activity, be more prepared for guard screens. So I thought going to that Sparks game, a perfect example was – second half, Fire didn't necessarily have it. They said, hey, let's put Kelsey Plum in action. Kelsey Plum was like, I'm not going to show. And then they turned the corner. They ran it again, and Kelsey Plum was like, well, I'm not going to show. Sparks were able to handle it. They ran it a third time, and KP was like, fine, I'll switch. And then we'll kind of just figure it out from there, and they had a level of activity. Then you have to tie that in with the defense, which they will turn the pressure up on anyone and everyone. If you saw that Sparks game, Kelsey Plum, it not you. Would you like to drive? That's fine. Here's five Fire bodies in the paint. You want to run, you want to do a dribble handoff? Here's a hard trap. You want to do pick and roll? Here's a trap. Like, it's just not going to be fun for you. So, if you are going to have that level of activity, you can ding teams. But if teams now know and are prepared for that press, that pressure, those doubles, and they now know they can play out of it, does that hurt you over the course of a game? And so I think it's just, this is part of the learning experience for them. As far as having a level of success, so you have a little bit of proof of concept, but now you're going to have to guard your yard a little bit. And the schedule doesn't ease up. You got the Aces, you got the Wings, you got the Lynx. So this is going to be a good test for what you've built so far to see if you continue to kind of stack things on top of it. But the whole idea and the concept is we're going to be able to put ourselves in a position where no matter what you want to throw at us, we can figure it out. So let's see how it works.
No, I'm right there with you. I think, I guess the Sable said first, the Fire as of recording, 6-7 record, 11th in offense, 13th in defense, 12th in net rating right now. During this losing streak, only three games, but during this losing streak, a 96.5 offensive rating that is 13th in the league, a 114.4 defensive rating that is dead last in the league. They're turning the ball over on nearly 24% of their possessions, which is also dead last in the league during this run. And they're only converting 28.2% of their threes. And tied to that has been, you know, you already hit on teams kind of adjusting to what they want to do offensively, and they have to kind of fight through that. Carla Leight is also going through her own kind of adjustment period within that as the figurative, like, head of the snake of their offense. She is, if she's not their best player, at the very least, she is the player on the roster that can cleanly win one-on-ones at the highest rate of anyone else. We've talked about her drives this year, the way that she's able to get downhill. It is fascinating going through these last three games with Carla Leight. First, on the numbers front, 14.5 points per game before this losing streak, 9 points per game during the streak, converted 51% of her twos before the streak started. She's only converting a third of her twos during this losing streak. About 1.1 points per possession on Carla Leight drives before the losing streak, 0.7 points per possession on Carla Leight drives during this losing streak. That's not going to cut it. And teams helping at a much higher rate on those drives during this losing streak as well. And it was fascinating to me to kind of go through the drives in particular for Carla Leight and to go through these separate matchups where you face the Valkyries and it's like, okay, cool. You have to deal with Veronica Burton and a whole bunch of screen navigation. There's going to be nail help. We're going to flood you high. We are going to make sure that you are not going to be comfortable. Are you prepared to deal with that? Are you prepared to make reads out of that? You get into the Phoenix Mercury game and it's not the same level of like high activity in terms of their help. What if we turn some of these pick and rolls into late switches? We have Monika Koamakani at the point of attack. Again, the Valkyries have Veronica Burton, Kyla Charles, a lot of different navigations. You get the Phoenix. Here's Monika Koamakani. I might mix in an under. I might just be able to navigate anyway. We can turn this more into a late switch. Are you prepared to make those kind of reads? Are you ready to solve those particular problems? How are you prepared to deal with that, especially when Natasha Mack is also involved in the action? You get to the Spurs game. We have Ariel Atkins that we can toss on you, or Erica Wheeler. We can navigate. Our bigs are going to be more active than the other two matchups that you had to face. Are you prepared for Nneka Ogumike at the level or De'Erica Hamby at the level? And if you do beat that, you're still dealing with Ariel Atkins or Erica Wheeler on your hip, and we're sending late help on some of your drives. And so I feel like this is a very But I feel like this is a very important stretch for Carla Leight, as this is the first time that she's had this kind of volume, this kind of responsibility in the W at the very least. I think it's ultimately going to be good for her. But within the overall like context of what Portland's going through right now, they need her to figure it out quickly. Because I think that goes a long way to putting teams back in the blender defensively. Because as we've talked about throughout the year, what they're trying to do makes sense. How they space the floor makes sense. Their concepts and their off-ball movement and their cutting, it all makes sense. But you do still kind of have to win matchups at the end of the day, especially if teams decide we can mix in these different coverages and bother you in particular. And so I'm excited to see how quickly that can turn, or if it doesn't, does this just kind of kick off the slide of Portland towards the bottom of the standings? We'll see. Time will play out. But it has been fascinating, like, seeing how she's dealt with teams getting a little bit more comfortable.
I mean, I think it's been important. The big plays that Carla Leight has consistently made for the Fire, especially in fourth quarters of games, the aggression, the patience, the drives have been key, and teams are going to key on that. I think with what the Fire have built, traditionally, it's just kind of a team effort. And so if you're looking at like, hey, where's Bridget Carlton? Bridget Carlton only took 4 shots last game. This is a team that just kind of plays together. And so while there are players that who can make you pay and players that can put pressure on you, it's kind of equal opportunity to a degree. And so it might be Megan Gustafson that hits you one day. It might be Sarah Ashley Barker who's going to find a way to get a shot up. Like, it could be a solve as far as, hey, we tighten our defense up. Hey, we actually get back to making threes or taking the type of threes we want to take and maybe mixing in a few more drives. Like, I don't think it's fully off the rails, but it is something where it's like, okay, this you had success early in the season to a degree that maybe you didn't expect. The number of points is where I'm a little alarmed. But you scored 6 against the Dream, 77 against Golden State, 72 against the Mercury, 72 against the Sparks. It's like, all right, are you going to be able to get that going a little bit more consistent fashion? Or is this a stretch where you put tape out that teams have figured out? So that's more so where I'm at. Oh, I mean, it's still been a heck of a year for them. They're right there. The Sparks, by the way, fascinating team. I know there are historic complications for people with Sparks with their defensive rating and all that. I get it. I think they just need to communicate better defensively. The effort is there. They just struggle to sustain at times, and then they have a breakdown and they can't get themselves out of it. So communicate will help out. I truthfully am curious and wondering, this is not a statistical take, I wonder how much, if the offense can be a little bit more consistent, how much stronger would they be? Would that give them a little bit more wiggle room as far as being able to set their defense? And by consistent, I just mean we're hammering things in the half court, because they play with pace, they play with tempo, they have talent, they'll get the shots they want, but sometimes they play a little bit too quick. Now they're in transition and flow defense for like 2 to 3 minute stretches, and then they have breakdowns at half court while not scoring, and that just kind of does them in. So it's like, it's kind of like how I felt about like the, I hate to make a comparison, but like the Kings, where it was like, well, their offense is taking a little bit of a hit, but their defense is also taking a hit. So now what are they? So I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm curious where the Sparks are going to go from here.
No, I think that's a fair question to bring up. And I'm curious just how quickly they're able to settle in defensively. I think the most frustrating part for me with the Sparks defense is it would be a lot easier to talk about them or absorb their defense if they didn't have good stretches. Like if it was just the, what year was that, Steve? 23 or 24, where the Wings had, they were close to having the worst defensive rating in W history at that point. And I sat down the pod like 15 times. You could just watch those games like, okay.
Said it every week.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, I see why this is bad. This is just kind of is what it is. The personnel isn't great. The effort also kind of waned as the year went on. But like, okay, it just kind of is what it is. With this Sparks group, we have seen like legitimate stretches of, oh, they are a problem defensively. Like Ariel Atkins can guard pretty much whoever Lynn Roberts asks her to guard. They have good ball pressure sometimes. The bigs can get active. They can fly around the backside. It's like, to that point, the second half of the Fire game, where it's like, oh, we could just put you in a box. We can, to your point, Steve. We can communicate better and navigate things off the ball. If you do puncture us, we can play our way out of it. And also, we can kind of dictate terms sometimes with our pressure and activity. They just need to bottle that. If they do bottle that, like, one, I do agree with you. The offense being more consistent would help the Sparks on that front to be able to set that defense. So I do agree with you there. Circle back to the top. But if they bottle the defense, the offense is also just going to be, it's going to be easier for them to establish that in. Get them out in transition more. Get to more of those drives. It's in them. I would like for them to put some stretches together. Like, I wonder if the Fire game is going to be some sort of a jump off point for them. It has felt like reasonably better over the last 2 or 3 games overall, but yeah, like it's in there. And that's kind of the frustrating part for me.
Well, I mean, this is, the regular season is about figuring things out. And so you're always a work in progress to a degree. I think it's fascinating because they have the personnel, they have the mindset, just got to execute. The minutes where it's funny, because I feel like as the season goes on, Cameron Brink is just nailing rotations and flying all over the place. And then you look up and it's like, oh, that's 3 fouls, huh? Okay, well, now their defense looks different again. And so just finding a level of consistency for them will be important. So I wanted to make sure I shout out the Sparks out.
Steve, the New York Liberty got their wings back. We had a conversation, a couple of weeks ago, where the Liberty were in an interesting spot as they were sorting through some injuries and things. And you made the point that maybe a lot of this just boils down to getting Vinaj Laney Hamilton back, getting Leonie Feverish in the room. Lineup versatility goes up. Defensive versatility goes up. Things make sense. Those two came back, and the New York Liberty have not lost since. That seems pretty cut and dry. I personally have had a ton of fun with the New York Liberty defense. I have some numbers to get into a little bit later. But just to swing the rock to you, Steve, what has stood out to you about this Liberty stretch right now as they are creeping right back up towards the top of the Eastern Conference, of creeping back up to the top of the W standings? And we already mentioned where they are in terms of the Commissioner's Cup.
I mean, there's not really much new with the Liberty. It's are they going to hit the right notes defensively? When they have the right players, when they kind of have the right tempo, when they're able to play with the level of versatility on both ends, it works out. So, I mean, I don't have any new ground to cover. I spoke about the Liberty the last time we talked about them. So I'm intrigued to see which you have now absorbed now that they've actually won games and have defensive numbers that make them look good.
I think on a similar vein, I feel like we had a pretty balanced conversation about where the Liberty were, the low-hanging fruit for them to grab, especially health-wise, and things perking up. So to actually see that come into fruition, it has been a lot of fun. And for me, it starts with the defense. What Benaiah Delaney Hamilton has been able to bring back, what Leone Fevers has been able to bring back, like, it just strengthens their base. It makes it easier for Jonquel Jones and Breanna Stewart and Hanzu when she checks in, et cetera, when you have that amount of size and that amount of navigation up top. And then you factor in Rebecca Gardner, factor in Rebecca Allen come off the bench. Like, they can just get into some really fun stuff, which we talked about on that episode when we had the Liberty segment. But again, seeing it has been a lot of fun. The thing I really want to talk about with the Liberty and their defense, I am having so much fun with their zone, Steve. And it's not new because we've talked about it personally, but this zone has thrown so many teams for a loop this year, and it feels like it's hitting even harder now that they have Leone Fevers back and Benaiah Delaney Hamilton back, because at any given moment, Breanna Stewart and Leone Fevers could be at the top of the zone. It could be Stewie and Rebecca Gardner. It could be Benaiah Delaney Hamilton or Rebecca Allen. It could be Rebecca Allen and like, you're not going to have a good time. You inbound the ball, you have to deal with them behind half court. They drop into this zone, and now you're trying to figure out what areas do we actually want to puncture? What areas can we puncture? Because conventional wisdom would say, well, let's see if we can get this in the middle, or let's see if we can screen the top of this and generate something. But then you're just dealing with arms, because Stewie's likely going to be at the top. If you get into the middle of the floor, there is still a whole lot of size at the rim. And then you also have some of the recoveries behind that. Like, Leone Fevers ended up getting a block towards the end of that Fever game where they tried to get to the middle. Leah Boston was taking a mid-range jumper. It's like, well, actually, you're just not going to have that if we can help it. I don't want to be high, you know, I don't want to get into hyperbole, like, can any team solve it? Because I think there are ways to get to it. But they have been so devastating with that. The base feels stronger, and then they toss out this counter in which they are running more zone than literally the entire league combined right now, Steve. It's 108 zone possessions per second spectrum for the Liberty, 31 for the rest of the league. So I'm waiting on that to perk up for everyone else. But the zone has been a ton of fun, and the defense overall, a 95 defensive rating during this five-game winning streak. Again, have been stout in zone. The opponent effective field goal percentage has been incredibly low. They're underperforming the expected shot quality, which speaks to the talent and the execution that we're seeing from this Liberty defense. I'm just having a blast watching them. And like, the quietest slash also important piece of this, they're ending possessions, Steve. As you know, I complained quite a bit about the Liberty's rebounding last season because it was weird for them to go from the best rebounding team in the league to one of the worst. Defensive rebound rate around 79 during this win streak. Jonquel Jones has been a figurative and literal big part of this, but they've just done a really good job defensively. And them being able to tighten the screws, well, one, get healthier, but also just tighten the screws and get into some of the lineups that they tap into. It's making life incredibly difficult for opposing offenses, and it's also making it easier for them to flow in transition, get into some of their spacing principles, the random duck ins and rim runs that we're seeing from Jonquel Jones, Satu Sabally when she's in the game, Breanna Stewart can duck in and seal you. They are just punishing teams right now. And I'm having a lot of fun watching the Liberty. So I just wanted to sprinkle that in.
Well, to done. Your point, not... good.
I know, I was just saying, to your point, like, not covering literal new ground on that front. But this has been a positive stretch for them. Felt it was fair to bring them back into the fold.
Understood. There's a team that has won four games in a row. They are the Las Vegas Aces. There is a player on the Las Vegas Aces who has not stopped getting buckets. That is Asia Wilson. That is Asia Wilson. Once again, there is another player on the Las Vegas Aces who has not stopped getting buckets, and that's Jackie Young. So we'll check Welcome in with back. You, Nikias. How have you felt about the recent play from the Las Vegas Aces?
It feels like... One, it's just kind of like a return to form for Jackie Young, if we want to start there. Her efficiency has been kind of bonkers, especially outside the arc. She is converting, Steve. 58% of her threes during this win streak, and she's taking nearly 8 threes a game. And this is spot-up stuff in transition. This is Chelsea Gray, Asia Wilson action. We kicked the Jackie Young for a spot-up. This is a lot of Jackie Young just coming off the bounce or just coming off of a pick and pulling up and knocking down these threes. It's weird to see 58% on threes, 46% on twos during this win streak, but she has been absolutely absurd. And her putting the ball in the basket and ultimately putting pressure on teams has helped open things up even more for this Las Vegas offense. And then you get into Asia Wilson, Steve. During the win streak, 29-14, which is nuts. 4 assists, a little over a steal a game, 3 blocks per game. She is also knocking down threes, taking over 3 a game during this win streak. And I was thinking about this earlier in the week, like thinking about the Asia season overall. There are things that I can nitpick with her season. Like, it's felt like a B or a B plus Asia season to me, based on what she showcased she can do before. And that still means like 25-10 on the year. And it also means what she's doing during this stretch, where the Golden State Valkyries set the tone against them very early on in that game. Los Angeles Sparks, you're not going to have a good time. Seattle, it's a near triple-double and a stat line overall that just had not been done in W history before. She is now rounding into her version of form, which should terrify everyone in conjunction with what Jackie Young is also doing. And the last thing I want to say, since we started with those two, and I swing it at you, Steve, I asked Becky Hammon a couple of games ago about the Jackie-Asia pick and roll. And I was like, hey, what have you kind of seen from them? Because they've been good together, and the numbers support that. But like last year, they were pretty easily the best pick and roll duo in basketball. Like, you feel that with the skill set, but like also statistically, that was the thing that stood pat. And Becky was like, I feel like teams are treating Jackie a little bit differently, but ultimately they're just trying to work through some chemistry things right now. They're going to be fine. I'm not worried about them at all. During this win streak for the Las Vegas Aces, Steve, the Jackie Asia pick and roll, 60 on-ball pick set, 1.29 points per possession on those trips. And before the stretch, it was around 0.98 points per possession, which, again, good, just not the elite number we were used to. Those two playing at this level kind of renders everything else not useless for defenses, but what do you do if both of those players are playing at that high of a level? Like, you run out of answers very quickly against those two.
No, you're not wrong. I think the aggression from Jackie Young's important, but I think the continued growth playmaking-wise has been huge as far as being able to set up screens, understand where the space is, and there's a mix of you don't actually know because of the rhythm. Am I getting to my pull-up? Am I getting to my step back? Am I looking to turn the corner? And now if you want to switch, I know I can find Asia Wilson somewhere on the court. And so I think there's a stronger understanding from Jackie Young as far as, okay, defenses are doing this, let me get to my decisions quicker. And then with what Asia Wilson has done, it's just basically been the counters are there and we're not stopping. Like, it's interesting when you contrast the two games when Golden State and the Aces played, right? And Golden State, we all know, they see Asia Wilson, bodies are coming, multiple bodies are coming. And there was a clip in that first game where Asia rolled, two people that were not guarding Asia at all were there on the catch. That's just what they do. And then you see the next time they play, and Asia Wilson's like, well, you know what? I would like to shoot the ball without you guys doubling. I'm going to just get it quick. So here's a pin down. Hit me on a quick roll. Bop. All right, you guys run pick and roll. I'm on the weak side. Here's a quick post up. Seal. Give me the ball. Bop. And then the threes. So it's hard to describe the three-pointers because it's not like the three-pointer for Asia Wilson is new by any stretch. Something that she's developed to continue to add to her game all season long, or for years, I'd say. It feels real impactful this year for some reason. Maybe it's because of all the other ways you have to try and defend her. But the pick and pop, actually, I would like to shoot this. I'm going to make it. And we're going to go play defense. It's like, ooh, that is a body blow. I'm not sure why. But this is the Aces formula. This is why they're always going to be in the conversation. And I think when you look at this Aces team overall, I think you need to give a lot of credit to Chelsea Gray for continuing to be just the metronome. Whatever you need me to do, whatever lineups you need to make work, we'll get it done. And Melissa Smith has done a whole lot of work this year for the Aces.
Yes, she has.
As far as doing her job. Whatever you need me to do defensively, I got it. Offensively, I'm going to rim run. If anyone's near the paint, I'm going to seal them. But we're going to get me some post-ups. I'm going to crash the glass. That's an important piece for them. And so, especially as they haven't necessarily had they've had stretches of not having health, you know, missing Jewel Lloyd, missing Kennedy Carter, trying to get them back in. Being able to count on the consistency from Melissa, I think, is important. And so the Aces are rounding into form. How do you felt about the defense? Lob you a quick lob there, bud.
Ooh, like it's feeling better. Like it's been an interesting stretch specifically right now as they've missed some of their guards. So I touched on this, I think, on the last episode, but this is a team that naturally wants to switch. And quickly to the Nalissa Smith point, I've been pretty impressed with what she's looked like on some of these late switch. Teams are trying to poke at her in space. Done a solid job of containing, showing her arms, and then turning this into a switch, and then being able to contain from there. And I think it's very important for her to be able to kind of steal your verbiage, just kind of do her job and do what's asked of her. Her being able to hold serve on that end means we have more reason to keep you on the floor, which means you get to feel the offensive rebounding on the other end. You get to feel those duck ends. You get to feel those random one-on-one attacks late in the clock because what we tried to run early on didn't work. And so this has been a tremendous season for her. She has been one of the most efficient interior scorers that we've had in basketball this year. That deserves to be said. But to the defense, like, the switching has felt pretty good as of late. And I think when you can mix enough of that in on and off the ball, and then you can also say, Asia, we want you in a drop, just contain and contest shots at the rim. We can also mix in Asia at the level, show the hands, get deflections and steals that way. Also, Asia just contain at the level. We trust our backside to kind of zone up behind it and make plays from there. It's starting to feel more like what they want it to be. Like, overall, they're eighth in defensive rating. That isn't where they want to end this year. But what we've seen over the last few games, being able to execute multiple coverages, the help seem stronger, being able to cross match and toss out different matchups, just to kind of bog teams down a little bit further. It's starting to feel more of like what their formula is supposed to be on that end. So I've been pretty impressed. Other thing for me, that's related to that, mentioned at the end of the Liberty segment, welcome back, Las Vegas Aces, ending possessions. Like, the defensive rebounding has just felt a whole lot better as of late, which kind of ties back into an earlier Asia point that I wanted to make, where she is doing this right now, and this has been the year for her, and there's very obvious room for Asia to get even better. Converted 45% of her mid-range shots last year. She's converted about 35% of them to start the year, and she is still leading the league in scoring and doing so super efficiently. And that is like the shot for her. Pick and roll defense has been very good, hasn't been elite yet, at least statistically, not right now. As they gain more comfort, as they get healthier, I would imagine that's going to get better. To the rebounding portion, has not been her best rebounding season in terms of boxing out, finding bodies, being able to attack the glass that way. Low-hanging fruit for her to grab. Like, I tweeted about the screening the other day, and like, that's been much better over the last 3 or 4 games. It is scary that Asia Wilson, one, just continues to get better, to your overarching point about the way that she's moved, what the three-point shooting feels like in addition to the efficiency. Even within what she already does, there's levels for her to be even better. And as she gets more comfortable in shape, et cetera, we are going to once again hit the what on earth do you do with Asia portion of the program. So I've been impressed, folks.
Yeah, Dunkers. This is why I swung the ball right back to Nikias when it came to talk about the Liberty. have a quick question for you, Nikias. Do we feel like, and we'll do a tiers episode at some point, but do we feel like things are starting to settle? You know, it's been a competitive league so far early, but do we feel like we're getting a top, middle, and a bottom of the league to a degree? Do we feel like that's kind of settling in at the moment?
I feel like we are getting closer. I'm more intrigued with like tier 2 onward, because I think at the top, like, the Lynx have earned their way there. The Aces are coming off of a championship. The Dream have just firmly been very good all year long. The New York Liberty are very good, and they are getting healthier and look dominant right now. And then you get to the next tier, and it's like, okay, what do we do with the Indiana Fever right now? Because we know what the ceiling is, but the floor has felt a little more... Okay.
No, you just put them there. So stash them right there.
Okay. Well, then you have your top 5. And then from there, I think it's kind of easier to parse through. Like, we'll see where the Tempo land, where the Valkyries land. Actually, where would you have the Valkyries?
By put them there, I meant the middle.
Oh,
I only got 14 in the top right now.
Okay.
Hey, somebody got to win their way into 5. Dallas, Golden State, Indiana, one of y'all.
Okay.
But no, the rest of y'all. Dallas, Golden State, Indiana, and the expansion teams. Maybe the Sparks, probably the middle.
Okay.
Everyone else.
And then we have everything else. We have young players.
They said, you know, like when you're trying to take the leftovers, but you like 4 other people are leaving at the same time. So you just sitting there with the styrofoam box. That's the rest of the sky. Mercury storm in the sun. They hoping Oh, you took all the... all right. Hey, leave one for me.
Well, fine. I'll take this corner piece of the cake. That's fine. But no, I ideally, the Mercury worked their way out of that. And like things have felt better as of late for them. Nikias. But they do just... What's up?
Nikias, they're 4-9.
They are
4-9. Look, I like the Mercury. I believe in the Mercury. They got to win games. Like I'm so sorry. They have to win games. They got to win games. They're playing their way to position. They're only 3 games out right now. Mm-hmm. How many times they've lost? How many of their last what?
Seven of their last nine. It is incredible. It's incredibly hazy with where they are in the standings. And to your point, like we are in early/mid-June at this point. Like the actual turnaround, not just the process stuff, but the actual results have to follow. They do need to follow in short order. Like, I think that is a fair thing to say. This is where you want the defense, which again, I'm starting to feel better about as the season goes on, as they get healthier, but the defense has to hit a similar level to where it was last year at the very least, or at least from this point onward, you want them to kind of be an elite unit to help set the table. And offensively, you want to see some of the hitch removed in the half-court offense. You want to see more of the shot-making that I think they have the roster talent for, but it hasn't hit consistently. So, again, to you know, all jokes aside, I do think it's fair to note, like, they have to do it. Like, yes, I feel better about some of the process stuff over the last 2 or 3 games. Defensive effort feels better. But we are rapidly approaching the point where, like, hey, it doesn't matter how good it looks if it's not finished, if it's you're not getting the wins on top of it. That's fair.
And so – I just want to add some clarifying sauce onto that. It has less to do with what the Mercury can accomplish and how good they are. You need to win to give yourself the best chance to do what you are setting out to do this year, which is compete for a championship. That I wouldn't be surprised if they get to 8. Do you want to be 8? You want your first round to be the Lynx or the Aces, potentially? Like, that's a tough path. Sure.
So, yeah,
it's the same thing I said to Liberty last year. It's like, you've done so many good things. Unfortunately, have you seen where you fell to? This is about to be very difficult for you to accomplish. So if you want to get that done, you need to get back in the pool right now. Yeah, you got to find a way back to the track. You got to get back to the grid. You got to, we got to get 2-3 going and then, okay, let's get back to work.
Oh, I think that's fair. Get some quick shout outs in, if that is okay.
Who are you going to shout out? Monique Okoa Makani?
I do have some Monique Okoa Makani thoughts, actually. But before we get there.
That's why I brought up the Mercury. He didn't even do the Monique shout. I'm trying to.
No, I got the. Listen, you do not have to tell me to talk about Monique Okoa Makani. I promise you. I just want to say before we get there, on the Liberty front, I didn't shout out Maureen Yohannes for what she has done offensively this year. 3-point shooter remains insane.
Now he wanted to shout out Maureen. Get the one box. Video wise,
the one box. Steve has gone. Quick shout out to Maureen Yohannes, shooting 50% from 3 on 6 attempts during his win streak. Shout out Meg Gustafson, who has been one of the bright spots during this Portland Fire losing.
Meg Gustafson, you didn't even say her name last year. Is the day. All right, one box me again. Get me out of here.
We have once again lost the. I'm just glad that the post ups are back for Meg Gustafson in all seriousness. Welcome back to doing what you came into the league known for doing on top of that. So I wanted to give a quick shout out there. Now, as we circle back to the Phoenix Mercury, Steve, I have been intrigued by the Monique Okoa Makani season. I was excited for her to return to the Mercury lineup because I was very disappointed with what the defense looked like. You want her at the point of attack to set tones. I felt like she defended at an all defense level last year. And did not get the nod there, nor did she make the all-rookie team, which continues to annoy me, but that's neither here nor there. She's come back this year, and the defense remains good, and we'll get there. She has been so much more aggressive offensively than I anticipated to start the year, and I'm just kind of fascinated to see where that lands. So just on the basic note, for those who aren't watching on YouTube, she averaged 7.7 points per game last season. That is up to 12.3 to start the year. So 6.8 drives per 100 possessions last year, up to 8.1 so far this year. She took 41 free throw attempts in 41 games last season. She is averaging 3.8, so she's nearly quadrupled her free throw attempts to start the year per game. And her free throw rate, which is just how many free throws are you taking per shot attempt, et cetera, a 15.5 free throw rate last year. It's at 50 right now. Like, this is Brittany Sykes type stuff in terms of the free throw rate. or if you need an NBA comp, this is like Jimmy Butler stuff on the NBA side, if you want the frame of reference. It's not supposed to look like that. And I've just been trying to soak in like what this actually means for her. And also just kind of diving into like how she's looking to win in general. Because like I appreciate the aggression to a certain point. It is encouraging to me that she has gotten more comfortable. Like the two player action with her and Alyssa Thomas, she just seems to know exactly when and how to get the ball to her. Like it is 1-2 dribbles, wait for the screen. Here's the pocket pass. Alyssa Thomas can just kind of flow into whatever she wants to, whether that is the push shot, it's a kick elsewhere. So that part has popped for me on film. Some of the pick and roll setups in general for Monique. Let me back you down into the corner and then come off the screen. Let me hit you with a hezzy to make sure you run into it or give my screener time to get set up and now I can get to spots. And she is a lot more comfortable just attacking drop this year. She's more comfortable and more aggressive taking pull-up twos this year. As mentioned a little bit earlier, the drives are up. I'm just kind of fascinated by this. And I want to see like what this actually means. With the passing bit, the one thing I will say, I haven't loved the passing placement all the time on like the actual kickouts. Like that is just an obvious growth area for her. But the fact that she's seeing this stuff seems to be a step in the right direction. And so if she legitimately becomes two-way point guard versus an elite defender that can also knock down some shots and run something for you sometimes, if she can legitimately like shepherd your offense sometimes, that is going to be an important development for her, and I think it's going to be an important development for the Phoenix Mercury overall. So I did want to get into just a little bit of what the Monique experience has been like so far.
Oh, just to add to what you said, I think it's important for the Mercury to have a, you know, they always have a level of versatility, but if Monique Okoye-Omakanye can punish teams on top of what she can do defensively, that just gives the Mercury a little bit more punch, which I think they would need in a playoff setting. Like the growth from Okoye-Omakanye and Mack on top of what AT can do, I think that gives them an interesting mix. They just need to put themselves in the right position to get that done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm right there with you. If I can circle back, can I ask you a Portland Fire defense question really quickly before we get out of
here? Sure.
Absolutely. Because we talked about their aggression overall and teams kind of finding some comfort in how to poke at that, et cetera. With that, would you like to see them dial back some of the pressure and activity? Or is this just a matter of you just have to better than what we've seen?
No, I mean, I think they've shown enough nuance. It doesn't feel like this is automatic to be automatic. Now, sometimes they do that where it comes with the pressure or an automatic trap and pick and roll. But it doesn't feel like, okay, this is our exact base. We're going to do this every single time. But there's enough nuance there to where I've seen them show late help on a drive by choice. I've seen them hedge as opposed to just pure out trapping. Like there's details within it where it's not like you're just putting two on the ball to put two on the ball to try and cause havoc and now you're getting torched in your rotation behind it. So I trust that there's enough of a why behind it and the impact it can have on top players with how they play stylistically offensively. And plus, like, it's not like their base is defense. So for them to just kind of have something they can throw out there to steal some seconds or to take a team out of rhythm, I think it's a plus for them.
Okay. That is fair. Wanted to get your thoughts on that front. Because, I mean, that is just it's a high-octane style defensively. It's high risk, high reward if you're going to put two on the ball in any capacity, whether it's just containment stuff, head stuff, full-out trapping. You are inherently handing a numbers game to the other side. But also, that just takes a lot of energy. And so if you are going to drive as much as they do and cut as much as they do and try to screen as much as they do, and then on the other end, we might cook you up full court, we might put two on the ball. Just wondering like how you find that balance and how you've kind of absorbed that balance. So just wanted to get your thoughts on that before we got out of here. Were there any shout-outs that you want to get into before we leave?
No, you got any other Marine Johannes thoughts for the dunkers out there?
Not one that would make you happy. So I will reserve the other Marine thoughts. Shout out Paul. It was gonna be defense related.
Oh, shocker. There it is. Yeah.
I feel like I know you a little bit. Speaking of defensive rebound, to be fair, Pauline Astier, very fun offensive season. The defense is also, it's an interesting one, which is why it's smart that the Liberty have as much size and length as they do, and they can get to zone as much as they can. Like, they're doing a really good job of shielding the guards. And I just want Sabrina Ionescu to be healthy. That'd be my closing Liberty thought, my closing pod thought. I would like to see her play basketball. So we get like that'd be cool.
Yeah, now before we get out of here, you notice why Nekias 11th, I'm excited to watch the defense. It only mentioned about 4 names.
Hey, listen.
We got to the heart of the segment by the end, baby. Get us out of here.
Shout out hashtag size. All right. Thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports main YouTube channel. That's where the W content is living. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel. If you haven't already, that is where our NBA Finals coverage is going live again later tonight. We're going to see what happens in Game 4. Do the Spurs tie it up? Do the Knicks get a stranglehold? We'll see. Either way, tap in with us. You can follow me on socials at TheKaiusNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.